studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Second. Okay, now that I opened up the mic to the program, that intro was, I'm repeating the last 10 seconds because I screwed up. Anyways, that it kind of goes along with today's theme about, even though I don't have children, you know, I'm pretty upset about what's going on in the schools. And Cliff is sitting over there. He's already downed the samples of Dancing Dog cookies, just foaming at the mouth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, again, where government regulations, that's letting the government control our lives. You know, not everybody can homeschool their children. And if you can't homeschool your children for whatever reason, you know, possibly because your both spouses are working and how do you do it, I'd be tempted to just pull my kid out of school entirely.
Yeah, and if you're wondering what we're talking about, there was a case earlier this week. Let's see, get my notes here. I'm doing really good. I'm really starting off the program good, Cliff, as you can tell. Anyways, in North Carolina, there was a 4-year-old that was the school went through and inspected the kids' lunches. They selected random kids and inspected them, and decided that what the parent had packed for the kids' lunch not nutritional enough, and took the kid down to the cafeteria and fed them chicken nuggets and some other goodies, which the kid apparently just ate a couple and called it good. But apparently that the lunch did not meet the recommended nutritional standards that are required by the school, which will include 1 serving of milk, 2 servings of fruits or vegetables, 1 serving of grains or breads, 1 serving meat allowance, or alternative, excuse me. And this came from a copy of one of the letters that the principal sent out to the parent. And you can see a copy of this letter on theblaze.com, by the way. And I guess I'm having trouble talking because I'm trying to hold back because I'm kind of furious, you know.
Yeah, really. One of the things that gets to me is the kids. The lunch the kid took to school was a turkey and cheese sandwich on whole wheat bread, a banana, chips, and apple juice. And actually, that meets the federal guidelines better than what the school's lunch did. And yet, they seem to think it didn't. And they charged the mom $1.25 to feed the child. You know. And this particular case, actually, it wasn't a mom, it was a grandma. And in this particular case, they didn't do this because they didn't have the money to buy the child's lunch. They did it because they felt it was a better lunch, and they were right. It's so insane. Again, the big thing that gets to me and the thing that I really get upset about is the fact that they gave this child this lunch, which consisted of chicken nuggets and a potato, sweet potato. That's what I said. I never can think of sweet potato because I hate sweet potatoes. But anyway, she was given all this stuff, then she only ate 3 of the chicken nuggets and threw the rest of it away. So she got a much, much inferior lunch. Of course, I don't know how much of the lunch that was packed for her she would have eaten either. but perhaps all of it because the parents know significantly more about what the child's tastes are than does the school. And the school doesn't care about the child's taste. They care about stuffing something down their throat, and we're heading it the wrong direction. You've got to, you know, one of the things that gets to me is the parents at home who made this lunch, in this particular case, I think it was a grandparent, but whoever made this lunch is actually looking at what the child gets for the course of the entire day to eat, and this fits in with it. The school doesn't know what the kid's getting at home that's outside of the school's purview, and so consequently, they don't know what they're doing and how much that lunch that they're feeding them is screwing up their system. So, you know, this whole idea of the government being able to tell you more about what to do than than you can, that's ridiculous.
Well, on top of it, there's, you know, various reasons why parents pack lunches. One of them is cost, because the cafeteria food that the kid ate, I mean, her name was Jacqueline or Jaslyn, the parents were billed for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the point, that's actually a point, but it's not real good, because it's how much it costs. The cost is important, but to the school, not to the parent. The parent can apply to get free meals, and that's possible. But the school doesn't get reimbursed for something that the kid doesn't eat. So they're trying to force the child, all children, to eat in this cafeteria and eat that food. That way they get more money. And that's the problem that we have in this whole thing is how much money the school is getting, and whether, you know, of course, now who knows what the school is doing with money. They may not be spending it properly either. So we got to look at a lot of things. In my opinion, the whole thing boils down to sue them. I think you should sue the school. I think you should sue the school board. I think you should sue this principal. And then I think you should sue President Obama.
Yeah, and speaking of suing, let's sue some business real quick and get that out of the way. This program, once again, is sponsored by Dancing Dog Cookies. Nice, healthy treats for your little doggy and Cliff.
Maybe we should send those to school in about lunchbox.
Good. You know, at least they look pretty.
Probably a better nutritional balance than food freedom.
Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog Cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them. And I'm sure you will, too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to get Tom and Kathy on the program here. I think I'll threaten to hold their ads if they don't come on. He's a little mic shy to talk about his cookies. But, yeah, Dancing Dog Cookies, check them out online. Dancingdogcookies.com are in select locations in Lane County. And speaking of other business, too, why don't you give us a call? Give us the business at 646-721-9887. You can also join us in the chat room right now on Blog Talk Radio.
And don't wait until the last 5 minutes of the show, because then we don't have any time to talk about anything. We want to really be able to fully delve deep into your subject or something like that, if you can get around the fact that I'm still foaming at the mouth about this.
And if you're not listening to the program at the moment, that's no excuse for not calling him.
Yeah, really.
646-721-9887. If you are listening to this program on the archives, again, we always welcome emails, talk@krbnradio.com. So, Cliff, take a deep breath.
I was just sitting here. You know, I have to take one exception. Everybody that I've seen, I've read a lot about this thing and a lot of comments about it. And one of the things that everybody comments about is a question, chicken nuggets, processed chicken that is deep fried. That's not necessarily the case. Some chicken nuggets are not that processed. They are not that fat, and they are not necessarily deep fried. Chicken nuggets can be good for you. Well, mind you, most of the chicken nuggets that are good for you are not good. They suck. But, you know, the only chicken nuggets I like are the bad ones, which are McDonald's, and those are the greatest chicken nuggets. But the fact is that just because it's a chicken nugget doesn't make it bad. Chicken nugget can be baked just as the chips. Everybody gets upset when you feed, you know, potato chips or other kind of chips to kids. They can be baked as well. And so, people acknowledge that. But, you know, the chicken nuggets can be good. But doesn't mean they are. I don't know. But they can be.
Well, they shouldn't be your main meal every day either.
What?
They should not be your main meal every day either.
Well, then you get into this pizza that the schools feed you, which is supposed to be so good. And it's horrible, too. But the point is it doesn't make any difference. You're losing the whole idea. The obesity problem is not perpetuated by what you eat. It's perpetuated by how much you eat. You've got to control how much you eat, not what you eat. And if a sandwich and a juice and a dessert, it's not too much. You know, if you're putting three sandwiches in the kid's lunchbox, which is what I used to take to school because I made my own. I wanted more to eat. That's why I made them my lunch. But, that was my problem. And I do have an obesity problem. So, you know, goes to show you. But it's not what you eat. It's how much you eat. And then the fact that, people are saying don't allow candy in the classroom. That's not a problem either. It's how much candy. If you sit there and eat one piece of taffy or one Hershey's Kiss or something like that, that's not going to hurt you. But if you sit there and eat one every minute for the entire time you're in that class, yes, that's going to be a problem. So it's not how much, and not what you eat, it's how much you eat. And we've got to concern ourselves with that.
Well, I was going to say kind of sarcastically, you know, what's next? Are they going to start inspecting your underwear? Then I had a flashback to when I was in junior high or whatever they call it now. And the answer to that was yes, they inspected our underwear.
Yeah, and that's too bad. We're really getting carried away with what we inspect and how what we inspect for. We've got so many rules and regulations that it's a nanny state is what it is becoming, a very much so a nanny state. As long as we have, in this particular case, President Obama in charge, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. He believes he knows better than we do about everything we have to do about our lives, everything. And so, you know, how many light bulbs we can have, what kind of light bulbs we can have, how many times we can flush the toilet, how much water we can use when we flush the toilet. We need to adjust our shower nozzles, our cars, guns, everything.
And what's interesting about the school lunch is that this is actually part of the USDA's requirement that the schools do this and conduct at least inspections twice a year in the schools to make sure of compliance, and then they're rated on a point system. Now, this Jaslyn went to apparently had a good rating. However, you know, again, to maintain that rating, they had to go through and do the inspection. The school's rating was 5.92 points. I don't know what the range is. But even still, I mean, it gets down to the whole point that without the parents' consent to have an official come up and go, let me look at your lunch. I mean, just think of how traumatized a child would be to have. I mean, I know I'd be kind of like, what's going on here?
We're talking about a four-year-old.
Right,
this is
exactly.
Absolutely insane. I mean, you're going to scar this poor kid for life. Actually, I don't believe you can scar a kid for life, because they can always work that out. Kids are not that stupid. But the thing is, this is just totally insane. It should not have been brought up. If you have a problem with what the kid is being sent to school, then you write a nice letter to the parents suggesting changed or should be changed and how and why. But to just simply take they didn't take the kid's lunch. They put it aside and said she couldn't eat it. She took it back home again. But the point of that is just totally insane, especially since they're substituting it with something that's worse than what she had.
Now, it's not saying here, I don't see it, that they actually took her lunch and inspected it, or did she, you know, when they laid out the lunch to eat, did they actually go around and look at it?
No, they actually put her lunch up and inspected it before she ate it. and decided it wasn't good enough, and so they went and put her on into the line and gave her a school lunch. And, you know, supposedly it follows the guidelines, but it doesn't really.
Well, yeah, and like you say, as far as traumatizing the kid, I was just picturing, again, if I was in that situation, it'd be, first of all, I'd be kind of puzzled, you know, what's going on here? And then I'd be going, are you putting down my parents for what they packed, you know? Because in a sense, that's what
they're doing. To be honest, a four-year-old thinks that way. I don't think a four-year-old is thinking the fact that you're putting down the parents or anything else. They're just sitting there saying, you know, I have a good lunch. Why can't I eat it? And here I am. They're giving me chicken nuggets. Maybe she doesn't like chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
She ate three chicken nuggets and threw the rest of it away. I wouldn't eat one. You know, they gave her chicken nuggets and a sweet pea. That's absurd. I would have thrown that away too. You know, you got to consider, you know, the parent knows a whole hell of a lot more about what the kid's going to eat and what the kid's not going to eat. And it doesn't make any sense to send the kid to school to give them something that they're not going to eat. They're just going to throw it away and not going to eat it at all. So it'd be better, in my opinion, for the child to eat that sandwich and banana and potato chips and apple juice than it would be to give her all this other stuff and all she eats is three chicken nuggets and throws it away.
Well, all I know is that, like I say, 4 years old, that's a long time ago. I would be
fascinated.
The next day, I would be scared about bringing my lunch to school. I'd be afraid that, you know, somebody's going to look into it again and it's going to happen again.
Yeah, really. That's the thing. And she wasn't the only one. There were others that had the same
problem. There's another incident, and this is just what this is what we know about. How often has this gone on that we don't know about, that people don't contact the news services or put it on the web or something? You know,
I think
10% rule.
A lot.
Person thinks that 10 other people, or one person says that 10 other people are thinking it.
Right. Or it's happening to 10 other people.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and again, nobody considers allergies. There are a lot of people that are lactose intolerant and can't drink the milk. And are they being forced to drink the milk at school? And do they, you know, what does the school do when they get sick and have to go to the hospital? And this is just totally insane. The parents know more about what's going on than do the schools. I will have to admit, we are bringing the problem on with ourselves because we shouldn't be sending a four-year-old to school, in my opinion. A four-year-old doesn't need to be going to school. Six is early enough to start school. We don't have the kids in school at age two, which is what we're doing now. So sending a four-year-old to school, I think, is totally insane. We should be teaching them at home if we're going to be teaching them. And there's no reason. I mean, I've done extensive reading on how children learn and don't learn and that sort of thing. And I mean extensive reading for years and years and years. And I've read too many points of instances in necessarily other countries, because in this country we don't do it, but other countries where children start their education at like 12 and end their education at 16 or 18 and have just as much of an education and learn just as much as our kids going to school for 20 years.
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is that, I mean, this is just one little item of where they're taking away the responsibility from the parents and, like to say, making it a nanny state. You know, you're losing control about how to bring up your kids. And how many other instances are there that are happening that we don't know about?
And what if the kids are eating kosher? Does the school supply kosher food?
Well, that's a good point, too. I mean, what if the parents are vegetarians and, you know, they don't want any meat, or they're very finicky about, you know, the type of food they eat and the quality of the food that they eat?
That's true. So the parents need to have more of a input into what's going on in the school. And I understand a lot of parents don't really care whether they can buy their lunches and let the kids eat the lunches at school or throw the lunches away, as the case may be. In my family, the simple fact was the kids were given the money to buy lunch if they wanted to buy lunch. That way, if they didn't want to buy lunch, they could use the money for something else, because it's sort of silly to give them to buy their lunch, go in and buy their lunch, and then have kids throw the lunch away. And so this of the school making the decision is totally wrong.
Well, and I'm looking at this list here of the School Nutrition Association National Nutrition Standards guideline for kids, and I'm looking at some of this, and I'm going, I wouldn't eat half of this stuff that they recommend. Like, for example, recommended sodium. These are recommended labels throughout the school day. Sodium, 1,340 to 1,400 milligrams of sodium. That's a lot of salt.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't know. I have no concept of what a milligram is. I have no concept of shaking it out of my salt shaker. All I know is, you know, I buy it in containers of a pound, and that's a huge amount. So, and a pound lasts me 3 months or 4 months or something like that. I know we, as Americans, eat way more salt than we should. There's salt in our food. Having had a heart problem, I eat a reduced salt diet, so to speak. In other words, we don't use salt in anything because everything has salt in it. But and I've learned to change the taste buds, but it's actually gotten, to be honest with you, to the point where I don't much taste anything anymore.
Yeah, here's a also on this list here, which kind of drills it down a little bit. Meat alternative, recommend minimum requirement is to offer lower fat options at least 4 days per week, defined as an item of 40% of the calories from fat, which could be 1 to 2 ounces of meat or meat alternative daily. Grains and breads, 10 to 14 servings per week. Fruits, half cup, a total fruit combination daily. Vegetables, half cup total vegetable combination. Milk, 8 ounces daily, and the milk cannot exceed 28 grams of sugar per 8 ounce serving, and not to exceed 1% fat for all milk offered. But like you say, some people are lactose intolerant. And that's just the lunch. It goes through and narrows it down to breakfast and alternative snacks. But, you know, the question I want to throw out there is, you know, Cliff, like when I were growing up, back when gas was 25 cents a gallon. And you could buy, you know, you could buy penny candy, and when you buy Snickers bars, the Snickers bars were what the equivalent of the $2 bar is now, and that, I don't know, nickel candy, 10 cent candy, whatever. And we ate tons of this stuff. And
oh yeah.
And we didn't have an obesity problem. But then again too, we also had playgrounds. They weren't really worried about the kids falling off of the equipment and getting sued back in those days. Of course, back then you could ride your bike without a helmet too. But, you know,
yeah.
It seems like the tighter that they're getting in these restrictions, the more of an obesity problem we seem to be having.
Well, an awful lot of it, and this is the sad part of it, an awful lot of our restrictions and guidelines and laws are being used to make more money for the state. There's an awful lot of states who are in terrible trouble as far as money is concerned. there's a state that has decided that they're going to require, I think it's Massachusetts, that they're going to require bicycles to have license plates. And, of course, they're saying that could end up as much as $10 million a year in the state's budget. And that's what they're doing it for. They're not doing it for people with bicycles or to find out who's riding bicycles or to check people riding bicycles. It's just they need the money, and that's what we're doing it for. And it's $10 per license plate and a fine of up to $100 to have a license plate. Now, that fine, by the way, includes children that are caught riding unregistered bicycles. So this is just getting out of hand. It's because of money. This is all because of money. We are not attacking our financial problem nationally the way we should be, and it's boiling down to actually affecting us as individuals over and over and over in every possible place. So, I mean, this business of having every bicycle licensed with a license plate, you know, what do you want? A senior citizen gets run off the sidewalk by a bicycle. Well, at least now you have time and happen to have a pencil with you and you want to write down that license plate number, you can tell who it was. Oh, biggie, whoop to do.
Well, here's one for you, and this is in San Antonio. They, again, this is regarding the school lunch programs. In San Antonio, when the child goes through the line and puts the food on their tray, they stop at the end of the line, and a computer program takes a snapshot of their meal and a photo piece of identification from the child and records that. And then when the child is done eating, goes back through the line again, and the computer takes another picture of the tray to determine how much and what portions of the food was eaten by that child.
Well, you know, that's fine, except in this particular case, the kids know what they're doing. They know why they're doing it. So if they're supposed to be eating certain things that are good for them and they don't like the things that are good for them, they're just going to throw them out somewhere, and you're going to find yourself with a whole playground full of rotting food because they put it in their pocket and took it out rather than put it back on the tray to be pictured. I mean, you know, kids are going to get around that. And even four-year-olds are smart enough to figure that out and to get around that. I mean, it's amazing what four-year-olds can figure out. So a total, complete, I think, loss. A lot of kids don't care. They're just going to do what they want to anyway. And you know, what are you going to do to them? You know, put them for not eating their lunch? Or they're more likely to put their parents in jail for their kids not eating lunch. And that's... all that's going to do is going to end up, you know, you're talking about losing money. You're really going to start losing money because people are going to take their kids out of school. They're going to take them out of the public schools and start putting them in private schools if they can possibly do that. I read comments of a lot of people who said they'd work two and three jobs in order to pay for private schools to get them out of a situation that they're getting into in the public schools at this particular point. So people are angry. People are very upset about this. But I think they should go to a different point. I think they should take that money, and maybe we should put together a website or something so they can collect that money and put it all together and do a mass lawsuit against the school system or against the federal government or against President Obama or against all of the above. But we need to do it in a point that's going to fix it for everybody rather than just taking our kids out of school and sending them somewhere else.
Well, maybe a good place to start would be to do an investigation of all the schools and their lunch programs and, like you say, have a central database or something like that where parents who receive, who have their kids' lunches investigated or whatever, they have a means to bring it out. By the way, on that camera program, the intent of it is that the parents will receive the data for their children, how much they eat, and researchers hope the eating habits at home will change once moms and dads see what their kids are choosing at school. The problem is like with any data that's collected, it may come, or any program, it may come out as, we're doing this for the kids, yada, 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 but where does all that information go to after it's collected?
Well, in the first place, this is not any indication of what the kid eats. This is an indication of what the kid doesn't like that the school is supplying. That's all it is. And believe me, you can take a perfectly good food like pizza or even chicken nuggets or whatever. You can take a perfect food and put it through a school cafeteria and it comes out like crap. So I wouldn't eat it either. I very seldom ate lunches at school. When I was going to school, of course, I'm old, and when I was going to school, you didn't have to eat lunch at school. When I was a little kid, perhaps. But I can't remember actually when I was a little kid, I took my lunch. We took my lunch. And I could request what I was going to eat. I could ask Mom to make certain things, and she would, and send it with me to school. And sometimes I waited until lunchtime to eat it. But that's another story. But the point is, you're not learning anything with that particular program. I understand the thought that they'd like to think you were, but all you're doing is learning that what the kids don't like that the school prepares, and in most instances, that's most of it. Very seldom do the kids like what the school is preparing.
I wanted to emphasize the point you brought up earlier is besides the allergies, is what about religious requirements?
Again, that's up to you as a parent. If you're going to have your kids eat school lunches, then you need to, as a parent, make sure your voice is heard. And I don't mean just, kid tell them about it, but you need to go into the school and raise hell and let them know that you want kosher food, or you want this, or you want that. It happens to be that your requirements are, and that they need to supply it for you. And that's going to become even more of a problem, because it becomes very expensive for the schools to actually comply with all of those regulations and all of those requirements. And so maybe they'd get off your back.
Well, a lot of it, too, is you're taking the parents out of the loop. Now, about 15 years ago, when I owned my own business, I had an employee that she was telling me that her daughter, which was a teenage daughter at the time, was being pulled into the nurse's office, and her weight was taken because she was skinny, and the school was concerned that she was undernourished. And after doing this for a couple of weeks, finally the kid told her mother, and they went down and talked, the hell are you doing, taking my kid into the nurse's office every week? And because they were going to file an action against her for not feeding her child correctly. As it turns out, what she tried to tell the school, and actually got a couple doctors involved to back up her story, is that her child has an ailment where she doesn't process food very well.
And there are a lot of people who have that. I wish I had that, but we won't go to that. But yeah, you can't just arbitrarily decide on your own to start checking things and decide what's being done is wrong unless you know the story. You've got to know the story. And that's where you as a parent, you have to be on top of it enough to be able to go in and make sure that what the school is doing is acceptable. And if it's not, make them stop.
Well, I agree. I mean, how much information should a school have about your child? I mean, how much should the system be in your life? Now, granted, Child Protective Services and things like that, the usual abuse to children. I mean, yeah, they should know about that. Some kid shows up with a bunch of bruises. Good clue, but beyond that, where does it stop, I guess the thing is, and where is it going?
Well, I guess I've said this before, but I have nothing to hide, so if they want to find out about me, that's fine. If they want to check on me, if they want to check on my kids, I don't believe that my kids are going to have anything to hide, and if they do, I would like to know about it. But disrupting my child's life to take the kid in there every day and weigh the kid, that's not up to them to do. That's up to me or up to the doctor or hospital or whatever the situation may be, but it's not up to the school. Now, I can see what they're doing. The obesity is a problem, and the opposite of that, unbeastity or something, I don't know, is also, it's not anorexia. She was not anorexic. She just didn't process the food. Anorexics process the food, and then they throw it back up again. And so, they're doing that on purpose. So there's a difference between, I think, that. But the point is, it's up to the parents to watch for that. It's not, and I am aware, unfortunately, that there are parents who don't watch for it. There are parents who don't care. There are parents who don't or don't even know how to take care of things like that, or don't have the money to take care of things like that. Yeah. So if you have a problem like that, that's the time that you go to the school and you ask them for help. Or you go to somewhere else and ask them for help. But the point is, it's not up to the school to make these rules and regulations and try to enforce them. That's just the point that I'm trying to make.
Well, it's just like my employee. the school took action before contacting the parent, which is they would have contacted the parent first and said, you know, we're concerned about the nutritional value that about your, you know, your kid. And at that point, you know, she could present, well, this is what's going on with my child. She has a nutritional deficiency, and, you know, and keep the child out of the middle of it. Here's another case. A friend of mine, her little girl was born with a condition that she never feels hungry. So she doesn't like to eat. You know, from day one, she never liked to eat and had to kind of be forced to eat. I mean, she's skinny as a stick. Once again, if the you know, the schools could say, well, you know, you're undernourished and we're going to force food on you, it's like, why put the kid through that trauma when it's actually a bona fide, documented medical condition?
The thing is, it is a bona fide medical condition, and they do have medicines to fix it. And so it should be being fixed, and it shouldn't be up to the school to do that. It should be up to her medical doctor or hospital or insurance company or whatever. But that's instituted by the parents, not by the school.
Exactly. And I'm going to throw out some promos here real quick. 646-721-9887. We've had popping in out of the chat room. Of course, we'd love you to call in and tell us what you think about this. 646-721-9887. And, of course, we are always flexible on the topic. If you have another topic you'd like to throw out there, give us a call.
But I'd love to hear what your ideas are on this one, because I know there's going to be an awful lot of people that are just absolutely livid about the whole idea of the schools getting this carried away. And, of course, it's not the schools nearly as much as it is the federal government in this particular case. They're the ones making the big difference. But we've got to have, you know, Uncle Obama out of our hair and out of our lives. And where it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. It's just going on. I got one for you. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
This is not a joke. In California, they're trying to make it a law that you can't sell flat sheets. You have to have fitted sheets. Now, they're starting out on just hotel beds, but it is a law. They're trying to pass a law in California. You have to have fitted sheets. Now,
why?
This is getting totally insane. I mean, just totally insane. I'm sure there has to be some way they're making money on this. I don't know how the government making money on this, because, you know, California is in deep debt. So, you know, but the fitted sheets, that's getting a little bit, well, no, it's getting a whole lot carried away, not just a little bit carried away. That's ridiculous. But they're doing that. This is a real law. If the law passes, California will be the first state in the union to have mattress police checking for fitted sheets.
Yeah, how do they come to the floor, bust down your door, and go, all right, you, out of the bed?
Like I say, to begin with, it's starting out in hotels. But again, they're going to have to go in there and check the hotels. Now, is this just to make the hotels buy new sheets? I don't know. But why? I haven't quite figured out. And I've read this article, basically, but well, there's something about people who sleeping on flat sheets or under flat sheets or whatever, there's more accidents of some kind. I don't know what kind of sheet accidents you can have, but they've decided that fitted sheets are better. And of course, the mattress companies all over the country have picked up that idea, because they'd love to have you buy all new sheets. Perhaps they make sheets, too. I don't know.
What are they going to do? Okay, how do you regulate it? What is determined as a fitted sheet? And what if the bed that will are within their specifications?
Well, that's why you have to buy new sheets. You have to buy a sheet to fit every mattress and fit every bed. I mean, you can't get by with just, you know, they're fitted. Bottom sheets are almost always fitted. Of course, maybe they're not in hotels. I don't know. All my sheets at home, the bottom sheets are fitted. But the top sheets are not. And I had top sheets that were fitted and didn't like them, because I happened to sleep with my feet hanging over the edge on the bottom. I'm taller than most mattresses, and I don't want to buy a queen size or king size or ultra king size or California king or whatever size bed. I prefer having my feet hang over the end of the bed, and fitted sheets won't allow me to do that. So,
well, what if you have an odd bed? Like, we have a converted water bed, and it's not easy to find sheets that fit with that, much less fitted.
That's no longer allowed. You have to have standard sizes. You can't make your own mattress or fix your own bed or anything like that. That's you know, this is a nanny state we're talking about. You have to conform with what they think is right or not at all. But, you know, the alternative, of course, is sleep on the floor.
Oh, no, can't do that.
Tell me about it. First place, I couldn't get up off the floor. But in the second place, there's no way I could sleep on the floor. I have one of these, what do you call it, mattresses that don't, you know, that do conform to your body but don't dent or something like that. What is it? I can't remember the name of them. Huh? What?
Posturepedic.
Well, no, that's a brand name. It's the kind of mattresses that NASA invented and made of that special stuff. And I have one of those, even though when I bought this one, they were horribly expensive. They've come down now because the patent has run out on them. And so now people can make them for much cheaper. But I went to the point of buying one, and I love it, but I really love that. But I had to go and get that because sleeping on the floor or sleeping in something that's too soft, either one, is a problem as far as my body is concerned. I wake up with all kinds of problems, and with this one, I don't. So,
here's a piece of that legislation, by the way, if people think that we're making this up or not. It says, use of the fitted sheet instead of a flat sheet as a bottom sheet on all beds within the lodging establishment. And, of course, fitted sheet means that a bed sheet contains elastic or similar material sewn into each of the four corners that allows the sheet to stay in place. California is considering this as part of the workplace safety as a purpose of the laws. So it's like what? You know, somebody has a loose sheet and it's like, oh, my God, I'm tangled. It's attacking me. Oh, I need a fitted sheet. Where's a fitted sheet when you need one?
Well, in the first place, think about this. You can't have a fitted sheet on the top. How do you get in?
No details. No, I think that's about it.
I mean, I understand. We've had sheets that are fitted on the bottom of the sheet and not on the top, which is fine. But that doesn't make any difference. It's still going to get tangled around. And it just, the whole law is, yeah, I suppose I could have told you the new law is SB 432. This is not a joke. It's an actual thing that's being considered at this particular time. I don't know how doing this is going to help. California has a $26 billion debt at this particular moment that they've got to figure out how to get out of. And this is supposed to help that for some way. I don't know how or why, but there it is. So they're trying it. It's just insane as far as I'm concerned. It's one of the other normal, insane things that we've got going. And that's the Democratic way. And I'm talking about Democrat as a party, not the Democratic system. But the Democratic way is that the federal government is who figures out what you should do and what you shouldn't do. It shouldn't be left up to you or to local government or anything else. It should be the federal government figures out what's good for you and what's not good for you, and that's all there is to do it. And so, and I don't agree with it. I'm sorry. I just don't agree with that.
Summary in the same law, by the way, specifies the length of long-handled tools such as mops or similar devices in order to eliminate the practice of housekeepers working in stooped, kneeling, or squatting positions in order to clean the bathroom walls, tubs. So now I can see them coming in with their tape measure and going, I'm sorry, that mop does not meet minimal specifications.
I've got a better idea. Make the entire bathroom out of something that's waterproof and just have big spigots, and you can go in there and every day you turn them on and water flies around everywhere and cleans everything, and then you throw a little couple chemicals in there and clean the whole bathroom all at once.
No, Portland has that or had that in their public restrooms.
That's good. And we should just make that a requirement of all homes, you know, and do it as a timed thing for that matter. You could do it as a timed process. And so every morning at 3:18, your bathroom cleans itself and then shuts itself off and lets itself dry. And, of course, you have to make sure that at 3:18, you don't have to go to the bathroom.
course, then again, you know, this is public. Yeah, I'll be careful. So somebody could probably say, well, you know, we need to get the dog a bath too and clean the bathroom at the same time.
Okay. Poor dog. Oh, well.
Name Fluffy? Yeah.
Fluffy's kind of soggy at the moment, not fluffy. Anyway, we cleaned the dog to death.
He wasn't so fluffy, was he?
That's fuzzy, was he? Wasn't fuzzy, was he? But
he wasn't a bear either, as a dog.
That's true. Oh.
646-721-9887 if you want to join this craziness.
You've got to have, come on, folks. 646-721-9887. Give us a call. 9887. 646-721-9887. Call us. Come on. Give us a hand here. Help us out and get us out of this hole or something.
And again, if you're listening to the program on the archives, send us an email, and we'll read your email if you request us to on the air next week, and that way you get your opinion recorded. Because the people I've talked to off air in preparation for the show, just like Cliff and I, you know, with or without kids, are just kind of really upset about the government stepping in, much less, you know, grabbing your kid's lunch and going, oh, I like that, I don't like that. Ooh, is that banana supposed to be all... is supposed to be green and fuzzy. Like I say, where does it stop?
Yeah, really, really. I tell you, we're a litigious society nowadays, and I think this is one place where I would suggest filing a lawsuit, because this is just getting way too out of hand, and you can file this lawsuit and go as far as you want to, because it can be against the school, it can be against the principal, it can be against the school board, it can be against the state, it can be against the federal government, it can be against Obama personally, or whomever, because you can go on and on and on, but I particularly believe that something should be done, not just, you should not ignore this, because we're getting too carried away. We're getting too carried away about everything. The laws that are requiring us to do things, they're getting more and more extensive, just unbelievably extensive, and it's absolutely ridiculous that we let these things go on.
Well, here's a kind of school-related, and this is just an opinion of mine. When I've had to make deliveries to, like, the high schools and stuff, I've noticed that the kids nowadays are having to wear ID cards around their neck. And, you know, like some other kid's going to sneak into the schools, like, do you belong here? And I think that I've heard, I don't know for a fact, that, you know, they got to scan in too. But the main thing is, for a fact, I've seen them wear these ID cards, you know, like you would at any other business. Is what's the next step? I mean, there's rumors on the internet now, and I haven't confirmed or denied this yet. I'm still doing research on it, about the Obamacare requiring RFID implants in people. And like I said, I haven't confirmed or denied it, but, you know, there has been talk about having our children chipped when they're born, so, you know, under the thing about if they're kidnapped or something, we can track them down.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It has its good points, and it has its bad points. The simple fact of the matter, again, the bad overall bad point is that we're taking the opinion, the decisions, and the everyday operation and control of your life away from the parents or away from you. You need to have some control over your life. And again, that's the Democratic way. The Democrats and Obama, that's what he wants. He wants the federal government to be a part of everything, to control absolutely everything. You know, how convenient would it be if everybody had one of these implants and one of these chips in them, and, you know, it would be so simple then to say somebody went out and did something wrong, they committed an infraction of the law, they parked in the wrong place or something. It would be so easy to go get them and bring them in and charge them with something. And so now the case is that, you know, while the only recourse that you have is to say, okay, you've charged me with it. Big deal. Put me in jail, do something, but I'm going to do nothing. I'm not going to admit to it. I'm not going to pay for it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit here. And I personally would mean that absolutely literally. I would sit down and say, you do something. I'm going to sit here. You're going to have to pick me up, move me into a cell, or do something, because this is just out of control.
But we have ways to make you to cooperate.
Resistance is futile. Yes, I know. I've watched way too many science fiction shows to not let this go crazy in my mind as to what could go on from here. So I'll try to keep that to myself somewhat.
Well, let's take this to the extreme, just as an example, like the Obamacare, which is forcing people to buy a commodity. And, you know, right now it's going through the courts as far as the constitutionality of it. And there's already other things that are going on that you hear in the news that laws get passed, and then it's challenged whether or not it's constitutional, but the, you know, people are already required to follow the law. Let's say the rumors are true that Obamacare passes or any legislation passes requiring you to be chipped. If you're not chipped, you risk a big fine in jail. Personally, I don't want to be chipped, but the thing is, these things, like they're the same size chips that they put in animals now. They're injected with a needle. You don't even know you got the damn thing.
See, that to me, not the concern. The actual chip itself is not the concern. It's the control that gives the federal government over your life and your being. That's the concern. In some ways, it's great. I mean, you watch Star Trek one day. The ship can tell you where the person is at any time, and that's good. That's a great thing, you know. You know, where is Captain Kirk? He's in the lunchroom.
But it does that through an external communicator. It doesn't do it by something that's been implanted into somebody.
Well, that in some cases, in Star Trek's case, you're right. It was an external thing. But there are some movies and shows that it wasn't. I would prefer that it be something. But then the problem with that, of course, is, you know, I'd forget it happened.
Well, Congress did, because this question did come up a couple of years back about companies with high security areas. They, instead of using a badge, which, you know, a badge can be shared or using biometrics, that they required their employees to be chipped, and Congress ruled that a company cannot make or force an employee to have an implant put in them. I know credit card companies have been talking about that as well as a secure means that, you know, you go to make a charge on your credit, you wave your hand over the thing and it picks up the RFID. Of course, that's pretty bad if you go through a lot of credit cards. But, yeah, just
In that case, I'd be all right, because that's the one thing I do have in my pocket at all times is my wallet. So, and in my wallet, almost always, I have the credit card there. Very seldom has that credit card ever gotten out of my wallet, except when I use it for something, and then it goes right back in. So that would be one way to do it. But there's no need to keep track of absolutely everyone. What we're doing right now, again, it gets back to economic. We're doing make-work things so that we can make jobs for people. But it's all government jobs. And that leads up to another step that's happening right now, and that's the federal employees. Federal employees make more money than civilian employees. Federal employees have much, much better benefits packages than do for civilian employees. And now the federal government has decided that the federal employees, and I have to give credit to President Obama. He actually has said this and has proposed this, and federal employees are getting pissed about it. But federal employees are going to have to pay 0.5% more for their benefits package, 0.5% more. Not the 3.5% that we pay, but the 0.5. So, but it's a step, and everybody, all the federal employees are getting upset about it. So basically what we're trying to do is make more federal employees, and that's not the way we should be going. We should be going to the direction of making fewer federal employees, because we don't need more federal employees. You know, we're going to get so many federal employees, we're not going to have enough civilians to pay for them.
Well, yeah, that's true too. But you know, in the private sector, those if you have insurance, it's pretty spendy depending on what type you have. But like say next year,
well, yes, you have to have insurance.
Well, 2014, you'll be required to have qualified insurance.
See, that's another of my major upsets.
Well, the thing that, okay, granted that they have, quick little comment on Obamacare, now they have provisions that if you make under a certain amount, you you know, you're not required to have it. I mean, so they're allowing for poverty in a sense. But I'm looking at like what I make now, for example, and 10 years ago, what I'm making now was a fair wage, you know, close to what they call you know, I don't know, just right above poverty, you know, between the $40,000 and $60,000 a year range.
Yeah.
But now it's the equivalent of $20,000, you know, 10 years ago. And between the expenses that it costs, because everything's gone up, and now fuel is going up again too, there's no money left over, and so you sacrifice, unfortunately, is health insurance. And if you're lucky enough to have an employee offered our employer offered insurance that's at a reasonable rate and reasonable coverage, I mean, that's great. I mean, the company I work for, there's insurance through it, but it's one of the worst insurances I've ever seen, and I really don't think that it would apply under Obamacare, which means that I'd have to take out maybe a supplemental and have to do something to bring it up to standards. But the point is that under the Obamacare, it's, I think, $450 fine or 2.5% of your income at the end of the tax year if you do not have qualified health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
it's one thing, just so this real quick, it's one thing to say we need to have, everybody in America needs to have health insurance. Great, good. Why can't we borrow from some of the other countries? But mandating that we purchase an item is, I hope they rule unconstitutional, because it's like saying that everybody has to buy a Chevy because, you know, the government has over 20% stake interest in General Motors. I mean, where does it stop?
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, that may happen because General Motors still isn't doing it very well, and Ford, the one company who didn't receive any money, is doing much better. Even Chrysler has got the best year that they've ever had, believe it or not, last year, the best year they've ever had. And so, but General Motors still got beat. You know, they're not losing money at this point, but they're not doing very well. But that's another point. The whole basic thing is that we can't have the federal government demanding or requiring us to do things that are federal. That's just all there is to it. We've got to be given the opportunity. Now, if you want to have everybody have, well, I was going to say health insurance, but medical insurance of any kind, it doesn't have to be health-related. It can be accident-related. But the point is, you need to do it like, for example, Great Britain does it. It's actually costs them less money than it does us, and theirs is free, totally free for everybody.
Right.
So that does have its drawbacks and it does have its problems because there are certain things that are not covered and certain things that are covered. And it's the federal program that decides what is and isn't. We have that same thing, by the way. Certain things are covered and certain things are not covered, but it's not being controlled by the federal government. It's being controlled by money. If you don't have money, you don't get the care. And if you do have money, you do get the care. Simple as that. And I don't know if that's better or worse. You know, people are dying either way, but I think a whole lot more people are dying because of poverty than are dying because of the government deciding that their affliction, whatever it is not covered. I mean, there are lots of reasons, and I've looked at these and studied these. I'm not going to go into them now because it's going to take much too long. But the point is, the simple fact that the system by, and I don't remember all the countries that I found out yet the file in front of me, but specifically England, is less expensive than our system is, and ours is not even free.
Yeah. Oh, I want to throw out one other thing too, as we're talking about the states or the government inspecting school lunches. I think this was in 2006 they required this for all girls to have the HPV vaccination for cervical cancer. Now, unless, of course, you have a religious reason for not doing it, but again, it's something else that the government has decided that, you're a girl, you're going to get the shot.
Well, you know, I remember doing this with polio. I don't recall them required to have the polio vaccine, although I believe in school, in order to go to school, you do, and you still do have to have certain vaccines and shots in order to actually be allowed into most schools. So there are requirements even at this point already. But
that affects public health, not the individual.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a difference here, is that they just decide that through whatever stats they have that the HPV vaccine is a requirement. Well, there's been some people that have negative reactions to it.
Well, I feel, you know, it can be made free. It can be made, you can do campaigns and advertising campaigns to make everybody want it, but the job of the federal government is not to require persons do anything. Laws, you're not required to obey the law. Simple as that. You can go out law you want to break, but there are consequences for it, and we can work on a system like that. This whole idea of requiring everybody to get something is wrong. I mean, we don't do this. This is America, and just like this little girl, the parents see what the kids eat as a whole picture, not just as a single meal. And so, you know, what she's getting in that cafeteria could mess up the big picture. And so, you may not want the child to eat what the cafeteria is offering. You may want the child to eat what you're giving them, and that should be your option because you know what the kid's getting as a whole, a part of their life, and the school doesn't know that. And again, we should not be relying on the school to control our kid's life, and unfortunately, some parents do that.
Well, one other thing I just want to say about the HPV, because I'm reading what the CDC. Center for Disease Control is stating, and one of the questions is, because apparently this program is a three-shot program, and one of the question and answers thing they have on here is that will girls and women be protected against HPV and related diseases even if they don't get all three doses? The answer to that is that it is not yet known how much protection girls and women get from receiving only one or two of these shots. So in other words, where's the rest of the of your information? But the whole point is that, like you said, it's okay to make it available if you decide that, okay, I would like to have my daughters go do it. But to have the government come out and just say you're going to require your daughters to do it?
Really. And again, our medical system, our system is out of control. The average doctor in this country now earns $180,000 a year. Now, this means that if you're a person who earns minimum wage, and we're getting more and more and more of them, our average civilian wage earner is earning less. So if you're a wage earner that is we're earning minimum wage, you have to work two full days to pay for 1 hour of doctor's time.
Right. I went to a doctor about a month ago. And in fact, I still owe them some money. My office visit was $194.
Yeah, yeah. And how long were you in there?
An hour.
That's oftentimes it's much less than that. But the point is making a difference. It's the fees are and of course as I say, the doctor's time, this 1 hour of doctor's time, that's not considering the doctor's office wages and the minimum wage, you know, the different operating fees that the doctor has or the hospital has or the office has or whatever. It's just out of control. And it's getting more and more out of control. The doctors, and I'm not saying that the doctors are overpaid. I think they are. But that's neither here nor there. The reason that, you know, doctors have to make so much money is because of things like insurance and things like that. We need to have controls over that. Insurance, one of the things that's destroying our country. That's a simple fact of matter of fact thing. Insurance is destroying our country because too many people have to have the insurance, or they get sued or something like that, and they can't afford it, and so you have to have the insurance. Well, there needs to be some limits put on things. I guess that's, wasn't that tort reform or something they are talking about it, but we're not doing anything about it at this particular point. So we've got to, again, I guess I need to deviate a little bit from what we're doing here and get into real world. You know, one of the ways of fixing this is by starting by replacing the government more or less that we have in there at the moment. We've gone quite a while since our last debate, and I want to let you know that there is going to be the next debate is on February 22nd. That's a CNN debate that you can watch on February 22nd. We've gone for quite some time, and things have changed, and we haven't paid much attention. So we should take this opportunity to watch that particular debate. It's happened in the last almost month since we've had a debate. Unless you've been literally watching what's going on in all the primaries, you probably don't know. I haven't been watching. I've been kind of ignoring it. But it is happening. So CNN, 8 o'clock on February 22nd. That's the next actual debate that's going to be happening. So you can go there and learn about what's taking place at that particular time. So there's a lot of, hello, what's, something's going on. I don't know what.
Your computer is taking control of you.
Again, yes, I know. Basically, things are taking place. We need to decide. Now, I have been paying enough attention to realize that my favorite choice of who to vote for, who is Newt Gingrich, and I still like Newt Gingrich, but in this particular instance, I guess Rick Santorum is doing much better. So that's why we need to find out. We need to go and check out that debate, and we'll find out what's going on at that particular time and find out why Rick Santorum is doing so much better. Maybe he's got a better idea at this particular point, or maybe he knows how to verbose it, he knows how to talk about it better, or verbalize it better, and we need to find that out. So that's the thing, that we need to be paying attention to what's going on politically so that we can change the government enough. And then once we've got the new government put in place, we need to start using our influence to convince them to change the way our government works. Don't change our entire government. Let's stick within the federal constitution, because I think we can do that without destroying everything, and still we can clean up things. Because, see, we're ignoring a lot of the federal constitution. We only pay attention to the part that the federal government thinks they like, and not all of it. So we need to pay attention to all of it. And then we need to start campaigning for the 28th Amendment. That's a real important thing that we need to consider, so that everybody works under the same rules. We can't have this elitist group of people that are our federal government being able to do anything they want to and pass the salary or the fees along to us. We've got to have some cohesion here. They can't do anything that we can't do, or we can't do anything that they can't do. So that's the thing to consider ourselves with. But it starts out with electing new folks, and that's what we've got to do first.
I totally agree with that, and I'm trying to look it up here real quick. As we, I think it was last week's show, we were talking about insider trading and such, and how they can get away with doing that legally is that it actually says in the Constitution that congressmen and other high-ranking officials in the U.S. government are not subject to arrest as long as they are serving within the official capacity. And that goes along with what Cliff was saying about the 28th Amendment.
They're not subject to arrest at all?
No, I'm trying to look it up here real quick. It's I think it was Article 6, if I remember right. Section 6 is that, let's see, payout. Okay, Article 6 is the senator's representative shall receive a compensation for the services as to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall, in all cases, except money and breach of peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at session of their respective houses and in going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place.
Okay. You know, buying something on Wall Street is not being done while they're attending a session of the House. I mean, that still doesn't absolve them from everything they do. I can understand not arresting them while they're in, you know, on the floor doing their job.
Right.
I can see that.
Yeah, that was the original intent, is that, you know, they could gather with the risk of the current government at the time trying to thwart their, you know, changing or bettering the United States. But, yeah, you're right, is that when you're – unless you're doing trading on the House floor – that's outside of
I don't think you're doing trading on the House floor. That's not the way the game is played, but maybe they are. I don't know. But if that's the case, then we need to stop that. But, you know, that's true. I don't think we need to change that.
I think it needs to be better to define, you know, that, yeah, they're not subject to arrest, but they should still be subject to the same laws. But then again, if you're subject to the law, if you break the law, what's your penalty?
Right. Well, as far as I'm concerned, we don't need to arrest them, just kick them out.
Probably several months back when we were making fun of the Obama bill and John Converse, who we have audios in the archives about why read the bill, he came up as a topic of discussion on one of the other talk shows the other day, and they mentioned and played an audio from an interview that he did about a different bill, and he was asked once again, did you read the bill? And he just came right out and said, no, but I voted yes for it.
That is a major problem, because who was he listening to say what the bill says? He hasn't read the bill. How does he know what the bill is about? And, you know, of course, he obviously trusts whomever he got the information from. But that doesn't mean it's right. That just means that he trusts that person. And so that's still a major problem. By the way, I wanted to make mention real quick here.
Let me answer that real quick here before you do, is that he was questioned. And he basically says that, you know, from just talking with other people.
Yeah.
So
that's fine.
It's hearsay what he's doing, but you know, again, his whole position, his whole job, is to, you know, read the bill before you vote on it. Is don't be like Nancy Pelosi saying you got to vote yes, you got to vote a bill in to know what's in it. You know, if you don't know what's in the damn thing, don't vote for it.
Well, but by not voting for it, you're voting against it. So you're voting one way or another. The idea is you have to read the bill. You have to pay attention. You have to know firsthand what's going on, not take somebody else's word for it. What I was going to mention is the fact that the U.S. Constitution is on KRVNradio.com. It's over on the left-hand side, and you can take a look at it and click on it, and the entire Constitution comes up, and it's easy to find things, because as soon as you mentioned that, I brought it up there and found it real quick and real easy. I just wanted to let everybody know it's there, and it's easy to go through, it's easy to peruse, and it's easy to see. So I just wanted everybody to know that.
That's right. And a little shameful plug, too, in the last 15 minutes of the program is check out KRBNradio.com. Cliff has been doing an excellent job of updating and putting good news and information on there. And like I say, if there's anything you don't see or you have a suggestion or a comment, you know, again, send us an email, talk at KRBNradio.com. Oregon.com.
It doesn't look like it changes for a while, but if you look over on the left-hand side of the menu part, certain things are added to that on a regular basis. And so just make sure you check out what's on the menu. You know, we started out with like 5 items on the menu. We've got like 30 on there now. So, you know, make sure you look and see, because there's stuff over there that you actually probably want to know. And if it has anything to do with what's going on in this general election coming up, it's probably over there and information about it. We've got results maps. We've got election campaign maps. We've got just all kinds of information about what the election is about and what's going on. We also have information about senators and representatives in your state as well as in the state of Oregon. We've got information up there. If you're in Oregon, there's a click. You can click on a thing over there that takes you to a page to show you how to vote and how to. And so it's just a wealth of information on that website that you can look for, as well as I do update the news part of it once in a while. It's been a while, there's just a wealth of information over there.
Absolutely. And I want to add real quick here, we got a couple people in the chat room. Welcome. Even though we kind of changed topics here, if you'd like to chime in on what we're talking about or on our main topic, please feel free to do so, 646-721-9887. And I have a different topic if you're willing to
change. Sure.
And that's anybody that uses Google got the notice recently that Google has changed their privacy policies. And in fact, their reasoning was that for every Google-owned site like YouTube and others, you know, they had a different privacy policy, and the whole idea was a streamline. Well, this news item, which came out about 15 hours ago from Fox News, was saying that Microsoft had discovered that Google is bypassing their privacy settings in Safari, which is a Mac application, and so they investigated further, and asked the question, are they also circumventing the privacy preferences in Internet Explorer? And they found that the answer to that was yes, that they are getting around the settings that blocks personal information and also access to your bookmarks.
Well, again, I'm sorry, but if you choose to use the computer, you choose to be totally exposed, because there's nothing you can do on the computer that can't be gathered and saved and archived and not necessarily used against you, but used for, in this case, Google's advancement, whatever they want. They make a lot of money by selling the information about where you go and what you do there and why you do it. They make a huge amount of money. That's the one thing they have for sale that's worth a huge amount of money. And that's the one thing that they have more of than anybody in the world is what you're doing while you're on the Internet. So make sure when you're on the Internet that what you do is not going to reveal anything that you don't want revealed, I guess.
The same token is don't keep personal information in your computer.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's the thing about Windows especially. There's a lot of stuff going on in the background and a lot of stuff that can be hidden from the user. So you don't really know what's going on back there. And, you know, and when I went to college for computer science, they were showing us some of the applications that, for one, you know, finding out somebody's password by tapping into the Internet stream going from that computer. It's amazing how much information you can collect. And just like Flash is an application you need to be worried about. Next time you're on a Flash application, right-click on it and click on the settings, and be sure you click on the privacy settings that says to not allow Flash to use your audio or your camera, because that's one way that they can actually spy on you, is that if those settings are turned on. They're turned off by default, but they are turned on from some other application. If you're like a lot of laptops nowadays have a built-in camera and microphones, they could be eavesdropping you anytime you're on the web.
Yeah, that's basically the case. I find myself, I have a little different system, and we do have a more professional system, so I can turn the microphone down at the mixer, and nothing can go through if I don't want it to, and I don't have a camera hooked up to it, so it's done. But the other thing is I do have an actual computer that is not hooked to the Internet, and I do keep some information on that. But even then, I don't keep any personal information that I would care if anybody has. That's just some information that I don't necessarily want to broadcast to the world. But even, you know, the computer that I use and go online, the one we're using right now, is totally effective. I can, it doesn't make any difference what I put on there. I don't put anything on there that I care about. Of course, I don't have anything to worry about.
Yeah, that's right. You admit everything on the air anyways.
Yeah. I have no money, so you can't take that. I have no life, so.
You can't take that.
So, whatever. Anyway, it's an absurd situation, but you got that people used to think that they could make telephone calls that were private. You can't. You can actually go and make what do you want to call it? God, I can't think of the words where they make sure that nothing can be deciphered. You can encrypt things, and they have encryption programs that you can use on the Internet, just like they did on the telephone. That does make it a little more difficult, but in this particular instance, almost every hacker of any repute at all is going to be able to hack through any of that stuff. So just the easiest way is just not to put anything on there that you don't want anybody to know. So,
Unfortunately, though, you know, they are working on systems that can read your mind and systems that I think the federal government's doing that can predict that you're going to do something bad before you even know you're going to do it.
That's true. That's true. That's again, so many people think you can read between the lines, and that's a bunch of crap. They can't read between the lines. They don't know what they're talking about in that particular case. A lot of cases they can get close, but they don't know. They don't know anything. So, consequently, that's silly. To worry about that, all you're going to do is just make yourself sleepless. Consequently, you don't even need to worry about that. First of all, nobody cares what I think. So, but more important, even though nobody cares, here we are telling everybody what I think. So it's all out. You don't have to look for it.
And that's why nobody's calling in at 646-219-8887 with 6 minutes remaining in the program, is because they don't care what you think.
That's probably it, too. Yeah. So, but that's okay. It doesn't stop me from telling you.
And I'll put this out there. If you don't like our topic, suggest a new one. So
that's what we do. That's what we'd like you to do. Give us, now you're running out of time. It's almost too late to call now because we couldn't really talk about much of anything for any period of time. So save it, wait until next week, and call us then because we'd be more than likely to talk to you.
That's right. Nobody can say that you did not have your opportunity.
That's true. You've had almost 2 hours, almost 90 minutes of it. So if you haven't had a chance in that time to give us a call, then it's only because you're chicken. That's what I say. You're chicken. You're just a big chicken. Maybe that. Isn't that a double dirty dog, double dare type of thing? I don't know.
But you know what? If you guys call in next week, we'll forgive you.
No, we won't. We'll argue with you. That's more fun. I mean, I love to argue. Please remember that we're just arguing to be arguing. We're not. I'm not going to get upset, and neither should you. But the argument, the actual fact of bringing out the information is that's the learning process. As far as I'm concerned, that's what we're here for. Is so somebody can learn something. You can find out our information and our opinions on something, and maybe that will stimulate a little thought on your end, and a few of those little gray matter thingies wiggling and turning and coming up with ideas of your own. And that's what we want, is ideas of your own. And then we'd like you to call back and tell us how far off we are, how much idiots we are, because we'd love to know how idiotic we are. And then we'll try to back up our idiocy and get back at you. A fun part of the whole thing.
You're going to prove you're an idiot?
Sure, sure.
Well, and the thing, too, we were talking about Constitution earlier. This is one of the freedoms that the Constitution gives us, is a way to share information, our opinions. You know, the KRBN is an opinionated program, in a sense. You know, go ahead.
I say it just a bit.
Yeah. We bring up news items, and, of course, to fill up an hour-and-a-half program, you can only give out facts for so long. You know, the whole point is, and what really makes the show, is that when you call in and express your opinion, pros or cons about it, or suggest another topic and take us whichever way you go. And it's also good fun, too. You know, like I've always said, if you've never called a talk show program before, these blog talk programs are a good form to kind of get your feet wet, so to speak.
Yeah, we'd love. And that's the important thing. We'd like to hear what you have to say and let you. And, of course, it goes in the archive so other people can hear what you have to say. And it is there for, as far as I know, it's going to be there forever. So, you know, give us a ring and let us know what your opinion is, because we'd love to pass that along to people, too.
And this is costing me $40 a month. So call in.
Yeah. We're not making the big bucks that some of these people are. We got to figure out how to do that. If you have a way for us to make money, give us a call, too.
Yeah, 406-721-9887, or send us an email. Again, as we're running down the last couple minutes, we did have quite a few people in and out. Most of them were guests, which we're always happy to have people pop in. Blog Talk Radio, which I still haven't heard any changes yet on it. If you are a guest, you cannot comment in the chat room, which I think is a bad failing, but you can get a Blog Talk Radio account for free, and that way you can participate. And, you know, but again, like I say, Blog Talk, I think, is doing itself a disservice by putting that limitation. But you know, we do appreciate the people popping in and out, but you can still participate by sending us emails and commenting on our Facebook page, too.
Everybody wants that Google information, name, address, and telephone number, so to speak. Everybody wants to know that information so they can use it somewhere, because I'm sure that's what Blog Talk is doing. It's using that information somewhere.
Well, I'd like to make a prediction, too, is what's going on with Blog Talk Radio in the back-end story of it. As you know, YouTube was started by a couple college kids, and it grew into the phenomenon that it is today, and Google bought them. Blog Talk Radio, for all its failings, is getting to be pretty popular and fairly well known amongst the general populace and stars. Candidates come on the programs, and so I wouldn't be a bit surprised at all that at some point Google decided to buy them out.
Well, next week we can talk about Google buying you. Because that's what they're going to do after a while. I mean, all these federal regulations and all of these chips and things that everybody's talking about, it's all going to end up being Google. So.
Well, Google did call me about 4 months ago to interview for a job, so maybe they would, you know.
Well, maybe they pay better than what you're doing, so who knows? It's hard to say. But I don't worry about Google. I like Google. Google is fine. It is getting huge, and I know that. But, yeah, so is everything else. Sooner or later, they'll break up, just like everybody else does.
They're the new Microsoft. So, again, until next week, 1 p.m. Pacific time, we'll see you then.
Have a good weekend. Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.